Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of A Good Good Thing. We hope you're safe and well, and we hope that you're having a good week. And if you're not, well, hopefully we can help, because from here on in, this is a good vibes only space.
It's like super great, so great, so great, yeah. We
could. There you go, I changed it up a little bit.
It's nice to change things up a little.
Thanks. Well, I just kind of was like, is anyone really having a great week at the moment? Like, it's, you know, post-corona, like, it's just difficult to have a good week.
I mean, I'm still having pretty good weeks.
Well, lucky for some. Why is your week so good?
I just pretty much always have good weeks.
But I think it's just because you're very much a sedate, like, introvert. I mean, and so this plays into it very well for you.
I wouldn't say I'm an introvert.
Really? I think you have introverted tendencies. But you are very confident when you need to be. It's not introverted in... I think you're, like... Your state of rest is introverted. Like, you like to just be at home and doing your thing. But I know that you like being with people. Oh, anyway, this is part two of our positive in a pandemic series due to coronavirus, COVID-19. Jack, this is over to you today. I hope you've got some crackers for us.
I have a different take from last week.
Oh, I knew you'd have to be different.
That is what I do. I mean, it was all inspired by me typing good news coronavirus stories in Google. Actually, it was very funny. I typed in good news coronavirus stories and Google provided me with the first link, which was US Vice President Mike Pence's aide tests positive for coronavirus. And I was like, I'm not sure that's a good news story, Google, unless like your algorithm secretly wants Mike Pence to get coronavirus.
I mean, yeah, but maybe it was good news in that it was like kind of like karma, because Mike Pence was like visiting a hospital without a mask. And he said that he was too, like, he didn't need one.
Is it ever good news if someone gets sick in a pandemic?
No, I was just saying it was good news within, like, if you're like a karma believer. I wasn't saying it was good news for anyone to be sick.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's good news that if you believe in karma, then there is some kind of proof in that news story. So what we're saying is Google's search algorithm obviously believes in karma.
Exactly.
Well, the second result was actually a good news story, a universal good news story, a news story difficult to write off as not being good news, whether or not you believe in karma. And it was about the Long family. Have you heard about the Long family? That's not only
good.
They're not just a very long family.
Is that because they're tall or like there's a lot of them?
Yeah, it's when I say it, like, have you heard of the Long family? It's like you're talking about the neighbors down the road who are very tall and you're being offensive. No, the Long family is a family who put out a hope board on the front of their property. So they found a piece of wood and they wrote on it, things I am looking forward to after lockdown. And they left a bunch of empty spaces with some marker pens. And then everyone in the community who would walk past would get a pen and then they would write what they're looking forward to after lockdown ends. That's aside from the fact that sharing pens in communal spaces might be a vector for viruses.
Well, maybe they left hand sanitizer by there.
Yeah, or wet wipes or those other things. But the board is totally full. Everyone who's gone past, not everyone, but people who have gone past have filled up all of these spaces. And they've written things that I can't wait to see my friends or my family or have fish and chips or go down the pub or some other things which I couldn't read the handwriting of. But
that's very cool.
In essence, it made me think about actually what kind of longitudinal positive changes will the coronavirus have for our society? Like humans are living through this time, this transformative time, as is often written. And it's not just about what good news is happening now, right? It's what this will allow us to do or encourage us to do going forward. So this episode is dedicated to what might be the ongoing positive societal and human changes coming from the coronavirus.
When we get together.
All right, so what's first up? What do we have?
So, thinking about the importance of societal changes...
Oh, sorry. Alexa's going. Alexa, shut up. I didn't even say her name.
Well, that's funny, actually, because my first one is Alexa will become more annoying.
Alexa, stop. She's going on about, like, a president or something. Jack, I wholeheartedly apologize. That's never happened. That's so weird.
Well, it's nice that we're getting some like recorded evidence of the problems of hosting a podcast in the times of Corona.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the stuff we have to deal with. I'm sorry, Jack. Please start again. What is up first?
So I was thinking about longitudinal changes. I was thinking about impact to society. I was thinking about ongoing positive things that are going to happen. And I thought darts.
Darts, as in like the game darts?
Yeah, you know, throwers, arrows, tungsten, dartsmith, all of those names for darts.
I have not heard of any of those. But
yeah, well, you know, the game's been around since 1860. So you've had 160 years to hear some of those. I'm literally just cramming in things that I got from my notes about the game of darts.
So what is the future of darts? I can't wait for this. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm personally a fan of darts. My great nan was an avid darts player and taught us when we were kids. And she used to win like loads of local trophies. And everyone down the pub loved her because she'd always win. But yeah, what's going on in the world of darts?
So darts, unlike most professional sport, is able to happen when you're not near your opponent, right? So normally to play sport with someone, your opponent has to be in the same place. Like tennis, they're other sides of the net. Football, it's 11 players like opposite each other that kind of intermingle as the game happens. And then there's benches full of people. All kinds of sports, right? You need the other person to be there, except darts. Darts, you can kind of set yourself at home and the other person can set themselves up at home. And then you can connect by like webcam. And then you can play a game against each other. And so it's almost the perfect social distancing competition. And lots of like official organizations have jumped on this. And ongoing darts tournaments are ongoing in Corona times. So there's like the PDC, which is like the big darts corporation. They're like the FIFA of darts. They're having the home tour. And you can go on their website and watch like official proper matches between professionals going on when the professionals are playing in their own homes. And there's the Modus, which I've never actually heard of, but apparently it's another darts organization. And they're doing Icons of Darts, which is another online series, which is streaming live dart matches for 9 hours per day. So darts like is going to be coming out of coronavirus with like a new lease of life.
I actually love that. That's so brilliant. It's so true, like especially if, do you know what, it made me think of like there's some new of those like kind of activity bars, and there's one in London that's all about playing darts, but it's all like electronic boards and stuff like that. So yeah, if it was like, you know, if there was you could buy the board that would connect to your internet, so obviously as you hit the number it could record what you had, you could so easily play with so many people.
Yeah, digital.
And it would also be mega time efficient, because you wouldn't have to, like, you could do it with like a team of like, you could play with like six friends and you wouldn't be having to wait for each of them to go. You could kind of like all go at once and then pause for a drink and then all go again.
I think you've just invented a new product, digital darts, the distributed dartboard.
I mean, yeah, it would need to come with like a solid backboard, because I'm having flashes of like all of the holes that would appear in my wall where I missed the board.
Yeah, I actually am very surprised when I think back that my mum let us have a dartboard in the house, because we put so many holes in the wall.
Yeah, we did as well as kids, and it used to like, or it would hit the brick in the garage, and you just, oh god, yeah. But that's genius. What? Okay, I mean, are you going to go through others? I was trying to think, like, what other ones can this happen with? Have you got a list? Are we going through more?
There are other things that I'm going to talk about. There are not other sports. Esports, okay, though, is doing well because esports, you don't actually need to be in the same room.
Yes, I saw that Andy Murray won his, and he's donating part of his winnings, or all of his winnings. I think it was just as in part that went to different places.
For people who don't know, esports is like computer game sports.
Thank you for clarifying. That's very, very wise.
Yes, well, always acutely aware of the audience, you know, because it's a remote situation going on here. I don't know if you've noticed, people are locked in their homes.
I just had faith in their knowledge, because our listeners are very intelligent, worldly people.
I'm going to move on to air pollution.
Okay, what's going on with air pollution, Jack?
So air pollution, as you might have guessed, is dropping. So a recent study by IQ Air showed that particulate matter, which you may sometimes see written as PM2.5. It's basically a very harmful type of air pollution, which affects humans because it's to do with the particles can get into our bloodstream and they cause like increased rates of cancer, or I'm not totally aware of the science, but apparently these particles, PM2.5s, are very bad and you want them lower, and they're quite high in cities. And because, since lockdown happened, the rate, the percentage of this has dropped 60% from last year. So all of our air quality, especially in major urban areas, is a lot better. And one, that's great because air quality problems are linked to 9 million deaths per year. But people are very much striving to continue having high quality air after the coronavirus.
Well, as someone that personally suffers with asthma as well, this is all very good news for me, because it means that, you know, I can walk about the city on my one walk a day and kind of feel safer in the knowledge that my lungs are going to survive it a bit better from all of the extra exposure.
Well, yeah. So I'm very excited that you're enjoying this cleaner PM2.5 reduced air. And there are some examples of where this is happening is for the UK government is putting aside some money for post COVID-19 economic recovery. And some of that is earmarked for companies that will work better to reduce their air pollution in different forms. So it's like we know the economy is going to have to recover after the coronavirus, and the UK government, at least, probably some other governments, is saying, okay, well, recover in a air-friendly way, which is nice.
This is, Joy, that's the thing, isn't it? Like that, the opportunity that this actually can offer can truly be great. So apologies if this is on your list. If it is, I'll stop and then you can do it again. It reminded me, with the way you were saying that, of so for people not in London who are listening, in London there's a clinic called the Dean Street Clinic, and it is London's kind of like premier main sexual health clinic. And actually they've been doing a campaign at the moment, which I hadn't even thought of until I read into it, as a possibility, that basically an upside of everyone being in lockdown for so long is we have a like once in a lifetime opportunity to effectively dead stop transmissions of because obviously it's been over 5 weeks now. You know, most people would already be showing symptoms on various things, and it means that if everyone gets tested now, then everyone knows their status. And it, you know, we've just never had that time where people have been able to, you know, get their free home delivery kit, and now people can all at once find out their statuses, and you could essentially stop transmissions of a variety of different things immediately. So for things like HIV that they've been working so hard to reduce transmission rates for, which has been working successfully with introduction of PrEP, etc., actually to now suddenly be able to essentially one-stop check everyone in London, and then everyone knows, it could just stop and that could be it. Like, obviously it wouldn't be it because people are going to travel and all this kind of stuff, but just all of a sudden in London or in this country, you'd have the ability to know where everyone is.
Yeah, it's a good idea to just test everyone for everything, I guess, at this point, anything that can be infectious. And then,
yeah,
it's well, okay, I'll speak to my local STI producing test company.
Well, that's it. So I mean, yeah, it's all right. I'm going to push it even further, actually. Anyone that anyone in the UK that wants to find out, and anyone in London, you should go to Dean Street's website, because it can show you how, gives you more information about it, and it will also allow you to order a free home testing kit, which I thoroughly recommend everyone does. And I'm gonna be doing it, and maybe I will record something for it and we can talk about it in another episode.
That's something to look forward to, an update on Neil's sexual health.
It's a top story.
Cycling.
Yes, what about cycling? I was thinking about this the other day. I wish I had a bike. I mean, I probably shouldn't be on a bike because I get distracted easier and I'd get hit by a car within a second. But Lord, I wish I had a bike so I could exercise with it and just get further than the park by my house.
Yes, exercise is important and exploring is important. And cycling enables both of those things. But we shouldn't also overlook its general day-to-day practical benefits of replacing commuting in crowded buses, trains, or polluting cars.
That's very, 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 very true. But I don't know, like, in London, it seems so sketchy, doesn't it? Like, and also, like, if I looked at the route to work for me, it is not any better for me to do it by bike. Like, because sometimes it's, like, it's great because it actually cuts people's commutes down because it's more straightforward. But for me, it would be a lot of effort.
But well, I mean, a lot of commuting cyclists are like, I could spend 30 minutes on a tube or I could spend 30 minutes getting exercise for the day.
It's true. I think maybe it's also the faff of needing to like have extra kit, because I tend to go to train before work, so I'd need a separate kit to be cycling in and then be changing, and it's like then my uniform's going to get creased in my bag. These are the things I think about.
Well, it's important because these infrastructure things are part of why I bring this up.
Too excited about it. Go on.
It's important you're excited. At the moment, transport is the biggest emission creator in the UK. 32% of CO2 emissions are from the transport sector, of which 20% are individual cars. And then there's other things that these cars produce as well, such as nitrogen dioxide, and as mentioned earlier, PM2.5 particulate matter from their brakes and their tires. So every time a car brakes, the brake pad hits the wheel and it like kind of wears down, and those particles go out into the air. And when the tires rub on the floor, they wear down and they go into the air. And so it's not just the fumes coming out the back of the car, it's also like just the car's operations which are producing things which poison people.
Didn't know that, and also just never have thought of that.
Yeah, there you go. So what people are saying is it would be better if we kind of had more people cycling. But the problem with that right now is, especially in London, but usually in the UK, pavements aren't very wide. And so people have to cycle on the road. And also, when people are cycling, they tend to keep closer to the pavement. But when you're exercising in the period of coronavirus, you're supposed to keep 13 feet away from others because you're breathing more and you're sweating, and those particles contain virus and you could be shedding viral particles to up to 13 feet around you. So we've kind of got this thing where if cars are still dominating the road, then cycling is potentially a big coronavirus spreading vector if it's pushed close to pedestrians and pavements. So what some cities are doing, some German cities, Paris is a good example, Milan's a good example, London's doing it, New York is doing it, is they're changing the roads and traffic rules to encourage more cycle bikes to use the road and get more cars off the road. And that includes things like putting in temporary cycle lanes or widening cycle lanes, making non-car routes, so only bikes and buses can go down certain roads. I think it's Milan, it could be Paris, but it's Paris, is that some streets are going to be made just pedestrian only, so no vehicles at all. So there's like local governments of cities are saying now is the time to stop people using public transport because they might spread it. But we don't people getting into cars because we'll get loads of congestion, and that doesn't solve the problem of people on the streets anyway. So if we close these roads, we can open up this opportunity for future cycling and ongoing cycling benefits and really kind of reduce transmission that way. And the other good thing about cycling is that lots of places such as London and TfL and the Mayor of London have said that if some of these cycling changes work and people enjoy them, they'll just keep them. And then we've got a more cycling friendly and less polluted city.
Very nice. And we'd have a bunch of people that are super fit with great thighs.
Exactly. And that's important too. Great thighs are important too. And to put some numbers on that, Paris is changing 50 kilometers of lanes for cars to bicycles only. Milan is doing it for 35 kilometers. I don't know how much London is doing, but TfL Transport for London expects there to be a tenfold increase in cycling as we come out of lockdown. And the government is expected to announce, and may already have announced by the time this podcast goes out, a £250 million investment into UK cycle lanes, which is pretty exciting.
That's very cool. Maybe I will get into cycling then.
Yeah, you should get on your bike about it. Oh, thank you for laughing at that.
Yeah, I thought I should.
The other thing I wanted to touch on, I'm going to do these last three relatively quickly. One is arts inspiration, right? So people know that art happens, performing arts, music, galleries, those kind of stuff. But often, one, it costs money. Two, you have to find time to go to the exhibition, come back. Once you're there, you have to have a dedicated block of time to watch the performance or show. And three, it's quite an alien experience to people who haven't been before, right? There are like social codes you have to know. You don't know quite what to do. Like, it took me a long time going to galleries to be like, oh, actually, I don't have to pretend that I'm interested in every painting. I can just kind of walk through this whole room if I find it boring. Do you ever get that?
Yeah, I was like, God, that's so true. I used to feel bad. I remember the first time I went to the Louvre in Paris, like thinking that, you know, you were spending ages going through because you felt bad, like not looking at everything. And then like one, if you did that in that museum, you'd be there for the rest of your life. But two, it was just like, no, like you, you've paid to come in, you've paid to then enjoy whatever you want to enjoy. And yeah, no, I'm very much like a quick walker through things I don't like. I mean, it was like you and I went to the Tom of Finland exhibition. Wait, no, it wasn't you, was it?
No, it wasn't me. But thank you for the invite. This is the first
time. Wasn't you? Yeah, sorry. I'm gonna start again. was like I went to a Tom of Finland exhibition with a friend, and actually the exhibition itself was a lot smaller than we expected. So then we kind of like started to look around the rest, and we were like, I don't like any of this. And I was like, I don't feel bad about leaving. I've paid to support the Tom of Finland exhibition, which is what I wanted to do. I've seen it. I enjoyed it. I don't need to force myself to go around looking at everything else. So yes, completely agree with that one.
Right, exactly. And it takes time and confidence to build up and understand that you can do that in those places, right?
So yeah, definitely.
People are traditionally alienated from them by cost, time, and just, you know, social experience. Whereas now loads of galleries are going online, they're increasing their digital presence. I work with a festival, bfestival.org, who are like a premier festival in Birmingham. They've put all of their exhibitions, all of their performances online, and they're free. And so many other places have just said, okay, for this period, people can access this for free, how they want, and if they find it boring, get out of it. And that's going to be such a relief for like people who, you know, don't normally go to these things. Like in future, coming out of this, we might actually see a lot more people interested in different types of creative arts because they've been able to experience it in this low cost, low time effort, low stress, low social anxiety setting of their own home. I've got one more. I mean, technically, I've got two more. One is learning. Isn't learning great? But I'm going to skip that one because I can't be bothered. So the last one is local mutual aid groups. And this one, I think, is more important because, I mean, don't get me wrong, learning is important. But this one, I think I can do more justice. Learning is like such a big topic and the importance of like being in person and how you get online. But don't even want to get into it. But local mutual aid groups is really interesting, and it's kind of new. I mean, the idea is not new. The idea goes back like a century or more about the idea that you can, groups of people can come together without some kind of central governance, and they kind of support each other and step into a place where charities and the government can't support people. So during coronavirus, the idea of mutual aid groups have popped back up again. And now there are like 3,500 mutual aid groups across the country where just concerned people in their local area have gone, we need to make sure that people are looked after during this time. And other people have gone, that's a great idea. We should join that group and we can help support each other and ourselves. And so these groups cover like 4 million people, as in like 4 million people have joined a group or posted to a group, which is crazy when you think about it. Like these people weren't talking, they were talking to their neighbors or people in their community, but not in this kind of mutually supportive format or framework. And now pretty much every region across the country has like this group which was set up for Corona to support people, but going forward can continue to be a source of good for communities and local areas across the whole country, which is kind of amazing, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think to your point about how it's quite a monumental step from just being polite to your neighbours to really thinking about them and being aware of them. And I suppose maybe that's because most of the time, unless someone says anything, it's really easy to just pretend that everyone that when they say they're fine is fine, I suppose. Whereas actually, because we know that no matter kind of how good you may have it, this is still hard for everyone. And so actually it's made people realize that like, oh no, I do care if someone that is near me is suffering in whatever way. And I do want to be there to help if I can, which, yeah, I think is definitely something that we hope carries on after this.
Yeah, it's, and there's some really like really great examples. Like I stole this one from vice.com, who did a cool story. If you want to get involved in your mutual aid group, by the way, go to covidmutualaid.org. You can type in your postcode and see all the local ones. So this vice.com story gave an example of a single mother in Hackney who is resistant to the idea of like charity or being like just supported by others. But what these mutual aid groups mean is that although she doesn't have much money, so someone dropped off some shopping for her, the next day she can go out and pick up a prescription for her elderly neighbor who lives like a street away and is able to give her time and access to be able to do that for a high vulnerable group. And so it's kind of like it's everyone's able to give what they can. And it's not this idea of, oh, I'm dependent on these people now. It's mutual aid. And that's a really nice part of the concept as well, I think.
Yeah, and I think that that's a principle that you really hope everyone take forward, that like it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to give money. It can be about giving time. It doesn't have to be physical. It can be emotional. Like everyone has something that they can offer. And as much as you hope people can find these things without a pandemic, and it's not the best situation that anyone's in, yeah, if that's something that everyone can take forward to know that in their own way, no matter what their circumstance, they have something to offer that can help someone else, that's incredibly powerful. So sweet, so sweet, so sweet, like a cherry soda,
bubbles dance. Neil, I'd like to dedicate this episode to one of my neighbors who lived just like four doors down from me, and I had no idea who he was or where he lived. So there was a chemotherapy nurse named Donald Soltro who passed away from the coronavirus in the last month. And he spent his time at work dedicated to caring for people who were sick and needed looking after. And it's weird when you think about these people who are like in your immediate vicinity, but you don't know about them. And it's wonderful to know how much he dedicated to his job and all the tributes that people have given him, which just say how kind of caring and nice he was.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, thank you for sharing that with everyone. I remember when you told me, it was incredibly surreal, I think, to hear. And there's, you know, things will come out of that. I think, you told me that there was a kind of GoFundMe set up because he was the provider for his family and people are helping with that. And yeah, like, we can't thank him and all of our frontline workers enough for everything they're doing. And it's those kind of stories that make you realize just how serious what they're doing is, and how brave. And so, yeah, we obviously wish his family all the best. And yeah, thank you for sharing. Well, that's it, Jack. I have to call time on today's positivities. Thank you very much for sharing those. Hopefully that's given everyone some food for thought. I'm definitely going to go and check out COVID Mutual Aid and find if there's a chapter, a group near where I am. But yes, hope everyone is staying safe and well. hope you found something useful in today's episode. If you've got any stories that you think we should be telling everyone, please get in touch with us at A Good Good Thing on various social media channels, because we'd love to hear what you guys are up to or what stories that you've been learning about. Otherwise, we'll see you in the next episode. Thanks, see everyone. Bye. You should say bye again.
I thought there was a gap. There wasn't a gap. Good.